greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally, 7 days a week, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and the Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the science of milk when we come back right after this message. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, don't we? And we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court is a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? Or what if a carpenter said, he who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client? Well, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps has to be incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Listen to this. James Nielsen, he's a professor at the Hastings Law School. Here's what he had to say about these young, budding college lawyer graduates. He said, quote, "It's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. It's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without once having spoken to or set foot into a courtroom or spoken to a client in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and their clients, it is a cruel hoax." And that's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at the law school? The number's 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Click on to the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about the science of milk. It's been my contention for many years that science is the problem, not the solution. We Americans have been running to science and scientists to solve all of our problems for at least the last 100 years. We believe in science. It's kind of like a god to us. It's like a talisman. But you know, back in 1900, we were healthier than we are today. That's right. We were healthier in 1900 than we are today. I know that sounds kind of crazy. You're told constantly that we've got vaccines today. And because of these vaccines, it protects us from disease. And that we've got better medical science today than we had 100 years ago. Well, listen to this. In 1900, your chances of getting cancer were only 1 in 33. Today, they're 1 in 2. Yeah, that's right. Every 33rd person would get cancer sometime in his lifetime in 1900. Today, it's every other person will get cancer at some point in his lifetime. Now, either one, we don't know how to control it. We don't know what causes it. We don't know how to cure it. We don't know much about it. What makes you think that we're safer today from cancer than we were 100 years ago? And then in 1918, the United States Army was testing men for military service in World War I, and they discovered that 60% of Americans were healthy and symptom-free. Well, that was the good news. Bad news was 40% of the people in 1918 were symptomatic. That is, they were deaf or they needed glasses or had allergies or they had some kind of a disease, a symptom, some kind of a problem, medical problem. Today, 100 years later, well, not quite 100, but 80 years later, we find that 99% of Americans have some kind of symptom. Think about it. You've got allergies. Or you've got some kind of a disease. You've got some kind of a medical problem. You wear glasses. Look at the number of people that wear glasses today. Got bad eyesight. In fact, it's so normal today that everybody wears glasses, but it doesn't make any difference because they're designer glasses. We just adopted designer glasses because if you don't wear glasses and have some kind of a designer glass, you're not hip, or whatever they call it. 1% of people today are symptom-free. 1% of people today are healthy. They don't have any symptoms. I'll hold up my hand. I'm one of those. I haven't got any symptoms. I'm 65 and I'm healthy. That's unusual. Most people that are 65 years old are shuffling around in walkers or wheelchairs or they're retired and they've got some kind of, they got a whole host and plethora litany of problems. I don't take any drugs. I wouldn't take an aspirin for a headache. I don't get headaches, but if I did, I wouldn't take an aspirin for it. I'd go drink water. But that's the difference between health today in 2004 and health in 1918, 28, 38, 48, and 58, and we have progressively become a nation of drug addicts. Even our children are drug addicts. 20% of the public school children are now on Ritalin. The whole of the adult elderly population is on some kind of drug. Why, Congress has just enacted free drugs for the elderly, haven't they? I don't know why we don't just legalize drugs for everybody. Of course, there's always the problem of old Harry selling crack down on the street corner. Nobody wants that because only the licensed, bonded, and insured drug companies should be able to do that. That's so that we can make money on the stock market, shouldn't we? Well, this Dr. Kradjian over here has a K-R-A-D-J-I-A-N, I guess it's Kradjian, has a complaint about milk. And his complaint about milk, as we know it today in the United States of America coming out of your supermarket, hey, this guy's correct. I'm kind of taking him to task a little bit here because I pointed out to you that God has a little different plan. I follow the biblical God-oriented plan for milk. And I told you that there's four sources of milk that God has approved: cows, kine, sheep, and goats. And that it needs to be clean, raw cow's milk. I know it's a wild new concept, but clean, raw cow's milk. We don't have that. Today we have dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, BGH milk, bypass protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, and adulterated milk, but we don't have clean, pure, raw milk. Now, in 1900, the big problem with milk was infectious diseases, typhoid fever, cholera, tuberculosis. And that's because the people that were producing the milk were producing a dirty product, dirty milk. And then they sold it to people and they got sick. So somebody woke up one day and said, well, we got to fix that. And they did. Now they had two ways to fix the disease problem coming from milk. They could clean up the milk supply and make the producers produce clean, raw, whole milk. Or they could continue producing dirty, whole, pasteurized milk. So the dairy industry, headed by the Borden family, decided, well, we don't want to clean up the milk. That isn't going to be popular with the dairymen. So let's pasteurize the milk. And then we don't care how dirty it is. See, that way you can have cow feces and cow urine, and you could have the milker with tuberculosis cough in your milk, blow his nose in the milk bucket, filter the milk to get the cow manure out of it. And then you've got all these bacteria in the milk, and so you just pasteurize it, heat it up, kill the pathogens, and sell it to people. And they've been doing that from that day to this. And this doctor has put, yeah, he's he's put the pedal to the metal here, and he's going to tell us about how this dirty milk, is being sold in America today. And I agree with the doctor to that degree. Now, I came along and I said, well, listen, I'm going to take issue with this because in the Bible, God told you that milk is nature's nearly perfect food, and it was and has been for 4,000 years, but we have sullied the product. We have adulterated the product. Until today, I agree with the doctor. I'm a dairyman. I'm George Gordon. I wouldn't even color my coffee with this commercial product, which is called milk and cream today. That's how bad I think it is. And I've said before that I never met a dairyman in my life. I'm getting to be an old man now. I never met a dairyman yet that would drink the milk out of his own bulk tank. Now, that's quite an indictment. I will drink my milk because I know my milk is clean. But I don't want to drink somebody else's dirty milk. And I'm going to tell you a couple of stories here. Listen to this. The latest high-tech onslaught on this poor cow is bovine growth hormone, or BGH. This genetically engineered drug is supposed to stimulate milk production, but according to Monsanto, the hormone's manufacturer, does not affect the milk or meat. There are three other manufacturers, up John Eli Lilly and American Cinnamon Company, obviously. There have been no long-term studies done on this hormone's effect on the human drinking of milk, and other countries have banned BGH because of safety concerns. One of the problems with adding molecules to a milk cow's body is that the molecules usually come out in the milk. Now, I don't know how you feel, but I don't want to experiment with the ingestion of a growth hormone. I might just make an editorial comment here. When you drink this growth hormone, do we know whether this is going to grow breasts on boys or beards on girls? I don't know. I don't know of anybody else that does. But we notice that boys are growing breasts, and we notice that girls are coming up with more facial hair. And I just kind of wonder, is it something we're eating in the food supply? I read an article the other day that girls as young as 8 years old are beginning their menstrual cycles. 8-year-old girls? And then they just kind of casually say, well, you know, in modern times, girls are maturing faster than they did in the olden days. Yeah. Well, I guess with a little BGH and some antibiotics in the milk, I mean, if you feed this crap to these girls, I guess, you know, maybe you could have them with a menstrual cycle at 2 or 3 years old if you keep after it. I don't know how you feel, but I don't want to be used in this experiment. And a related problem is that it causes a marked increase, 50% to 70%, in mastitis in the cows. Yeah, that's right, it does. That's why I wouldn't get near a stuff with my cows. I don't want to make my cows sick. This, then, requires antibiotic therapy, and the residues of the antibiotics appear in the milk. It seems that the public is uneasy about this product, and in one survey, 43% of people surveyed felt that growth hormone-treated milk represented a health risk. Well, a vice president for public policy at Monsanto was opposed to labeling for that reason, and because the labeling would create an artificial distinction. Yeah, that's right. If I had a choice between a gallon of milk that said BGH or BGH-free, I'd buy the one with BGH-free if I was going to buy the milk at all. And, of course, Monsanto knows that, too. And so they've got a lobbying arm. They go to the legislature and they say, we don't want that stuff marked. The legislatures put out the legislation. They create the laws that the industry wants on the books. Now, that's what I'm objecting to. You see, it destroys our right to freedom of choice. That's not education, boys and girls. That's indoctrination. I think that we should have a choice. And I like to be free to make and exercise my choice, and I've done that. I choose raw milk. I produce my own. I choose raw butter. I produce my own. I advocate choice, and I insist on having that choice. I don't want pasteurized, homogenized, boiled milk crammed down my throat, and that's precisely what the dairy industry and the legislatures are doing to all of us, whether we like it or not. Stand by. I'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. Rule one, remember, is don't say anything. Keep your mouth shut and shut up. Now, if you can learn rule one, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. You won't win them all, but you'll win most. And all of the evidence that's going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. And your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. And we know that because the judges tell us. Listen to this first judge. He said, listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation and intimidation. In the case U.S. versus Dickerson, the quotation is, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights, cited from U.S. v. Dickerson. Second judge said, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment, Belknap versus U.S. And then the third judge said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted. He said that in Marchetti versus United States. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call me direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the science of milk. All right, let's take a look at the antibiotics and the drugs in the milk. Dr. Kradjian gives us a little bit more information about how bad this milk is that we're getting out of the store. He says, any lactating mammal excretes toxins through its milk. This includes antibiotics, pesticides, chemicals, and hormones. And also, all cow's milk contains blood. The inspectors are simply asked to keep it under certain limits. You may be horrified to learn that the USDA allows milk to contain from 1 to 1.5 million white blood cells per milliliter. Now, that's only 1/30th of an ounce. And if you don't already know this, I'm sorry to tell you that another way to describe white cells where they don't belong would be to call them pus, P-U-S, pus cells. To get to the point, is milk pure or is it a chemical, biological, and bacterial cocktail? Finally, will the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, protect you? The United States General Accounting Office, the GAO, tells us that the FDA and the individual states are failing to protect the public from drug residues in milk, and authorities test for only 4 of the 82 drugs in dairy cows. All right. That's true, and when I was in the dairy business, we used to shoot the cows up with penicillin. See, when a cow comes in with mastitis, you got to do something for her, and so we were taught in ag school, give them penicillin. They've got penicillin, erythromycin, dihydrostreptomycin, and a whole host and plethora of drugs and chemicals and chemical cocktails. And then, now we haven't gotten into what we're feeding these cows. We give them bypass protein. What that is dead animals dried, ground up, and put into the animal feed so that we turn the cows into cannibals. We've been doing that in America since 1943. There's some good logical and sound scientific reasons as to why we do that. I don't think they make any good, sound, biological reasons, but they make a lot of economic sense, and it makes a lot of scientific sense. And after all, that's what we Americans are mesmerized by, is science. Now, if you go to the Bible and you ask God, should we be doing this, he'll tell you yes or no. You can get the answers to just about everything there is in life from the Scripture, if you pay attention to what you're being instructed. The Scripture is the handbook for mankind. It tells you this is the way to use the product, in the same way that you have to have an owner's manual with your new Ford car. God gave you an owner's manual with every human being. There are more Bibles in the United States than there are people. I suspect you Canadians and Australians probably have more Bibles than you have people. And God designed it that way. He wanted to make sure that you were without excuse. He wanted to make sure that you were informed. Now, he told you what to eat and what not to eat. That's in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. But we rely upon science. And science says there's lots of protein. There's lots of iron and riboflavin and all of these chemicals and things that bodies need in pork and shellfish and alligators and in pasteurized milk. And I don't doubt it. It's probably all true. The only problem is that God said you need to get your riboflavin and your vitamins and minerals from other food sources than pig, fat, blood, and pasteurized milk. And that's just where reality is at. Now, when the doctor goes to science and reports to you that here's what's in your milk, that isn't what you're being told on television and in the milk commercials by the American Dairy Association. The dairy farmers are encouraged to follow the protocols that are laid out by the universities, the colleges, and the dairy associations. And they do, and we did, and I did. And then later I found out that, hey, listen, I'm killing people. And so I quit. Now, as you can imagine, the Milk Industry Foundation spokesman claims that it's perfectly safe. You know, they tell you, hey, this milk is really good for you. But they can only identify 4 of the 82 drugs in dairy cows. Now, the other 78 drugs you don't know anything about. And they're not telling you. Others, perhaps less biased observers, have found the following. 38% of milk samples in 10 cities were contaminated with sulfa drugs or other antibiotics. And this came from the Center for Science and the Public Interest in the Wall Street Journal, dated December 29, 1989. And a similar study in Washington, D.C. found a 20% contamination rate in the Nutrition Action Health Letter, April of 1990. So what's going on here? You know, when the FDA tested the milk, they found very few problems. However, they used very lax standards. That's right, very lax standards. And when they used the same criteria, the FDA data showed 51% of the milk samples showed drug traces. Half the milk in America has drug traces in it. Hey, listen, it's not supposed to have any drugs at all. I'll guarantee you this, my cows don't have any drugs in them at all. My cows don't have any bypass protein. When I sell you a gallon of milk, it'll be 100% clean, pure, whole, raw cow's milk. That's what we should be selling. That's what we should be drinking. That's what should be produced. Now, they show you stainless steel pipelines, and they show you all of the cement floors and how clean and sanitary the milking parlor is. Hey, listen, they're not telling you about the crap that they're feeding the cows that's coming out in the cow's milk. Hey, they're not telling you about the blood in the milk, the pus in the milk, the antibiotics in the milk, the 82 drugs and chemicals in the milk. Oh, yeah, the milk is coming out in stainless steel pipes. That's right, the pus, the antibiotics, the 78 chemicals, and the bypass protein is coming right out of the cow's bag, right into a clean stainless steel pipe, and right down through the filters and into the bulk tank. Comes out in a clean, sterile, 1 gallon jug. You ought to open up one of those 1 gallon jugs and spit a big loogie in it and seal it back up, shake it real good, and pour out a glass. It would be cleaner. It would be cleaner than what you're drinking today. Well, let's focus on this a little bit because it's critical to our understanding of the apparent discrepancies that the FDA uses a disc-easy method. It's called a disc assay, A-S-S-A-Y method, that can detect only 2 of the 30 or so drugs found in milk. So they use a test that can only find 2 out of 30 drugs. And also, the test detects only at the relatively high level. So you got to have a high level of drugs, and it'll only recognize 2 of them. That's the test that the FDA came up with. Don't you think they could do a little better than that if they put their minds to it? I mean, if a private testing company can do that, don't you think the United States government, with all of its resources, could do just as well as a private company? I mean, come on, guys, let's grow up and get real. We don't want to find drugs in the milk any more than we want to find mad cows in a feedlot. It's bad for business. Now, we have 100,000 dead cows a year called Downer Cow Syndrome. And those 100,000 cows a year are hauled off to the rendering plants, and they're rendered and fed to the pigs. Then we take all of the offal and all of the pigs, and we grind them up and dry them out and feed them to the cows. And then we tell you, this is good. This is scientific. Now, if you're not supposed to eat pigs, what makes you think that you should drink the milk out of a cow that's been fed pig? You know, cows are ruminants. Cows are vegetarians. Cows aren't cannibals unless we force them. You got to lock this cow up on a feedlot. And then you grind up. I'll tell you what they find grind up and put into cow feed. They take chicken litter. You know, that's chicken manure, chicken feathers, chicken eviscera. Grind it up, boil it real good, and stick it into the cattle feed. Yeah, about 10 or 12% of it. So you grind up a bunch of corn and wheat and a whole bunch of stuff, and you stick in a bunch of chicken manure. Hey, this chicken manure's got protein in it. So do the chicken feathers. And after all, it's all boiled up, and it's made real sanitary. Then you feed it to the cows, and it gives them mad cow disease, BSE, Kuru. And then that's passed on to people. You got 3 million people in this country now with Alzheimer's disease, a disease you never heard of 30, 40, 50 years ago. It just came around about 1975 or 80. And get this, of the Alzheimer's patients, 13% of them test positive for Kuru. That's mad cow disease in humans, Kuru. That's Jacob's Creutzfeldt disease. I've done a series of programs on this before. Some of you, I'm not telling you anything new, but I just wanted to point out for those of you that might not know that this milk is bad for you, but this doctor's conclusion is all milk is bad for you, and I'm here to tell you I don't believe it. God in the Bible tells you that milk is good, gives you four kinds of milk to drink. He says you can drink kine milk, K-I-N-E, cow milk, C-O-W, sheep's milk, and goat's milk. Now, of course, in your first year or two of life, you should be drinking your mother's breast milk. It's got 92 elements in it that we know of. There's some we can't identify yet. And then I've been around for a while. You put a cow on a calf and let her raise her own calf, and you take a look at that calf compared to a bucket-raised calf in 6 months, and you got a little spindly, sickly calf over here off the bucket compared to this big, fat, sleek calf off the cow. Human beings do the same thing. You take a baby that comes off of its mother's breast in a year, and it'll be a fat, healthy little critter, and you take one that's been raised on that Similac crap, and he'll be a skinny little spindly kid, you know, with all kinds of ear, nose, and throat problems, and spends half of his time in the pediatrician's office. Now, there's more to the story. And this doctor isn't very far off point. I've reported on a lot of these same things in the book called The Milk of Human Kindness Isn't Pasteurized, which delineates clearly between pasteurized, homogenized milk and raw milk. Raw milk is a medicine. Raw milk is a therapy. Raw milk is a nutrient. Raw milk is good for you. But that doesn't mean that all raw milk is clean. You know, after all, if the raw milk is dirty, that's back where we were in 1900. Dirty raw milk is bad for you. Dirty pasteurized milk is bad for you. You got to have clean, wholesome milk. Now, at least human mother's milk is pure. Well, sorry, let's take a look at human mother's milk. A huge study showed that human breast milk in over 14,000 women had contamination by pesticides. And further, it seems that the sources of the pesticides are meat and, you guessed it, dairy products. Well, why not? These pesticides are concentrated in fat, and that's what's in these products. And of interest, a subgroup of lactating vegetarian mothers had only half the levels of contamination. So the lactating vegetarian mothers get their pesticides and poisons off of the fruits and vegetables they buy in the supermarket. And then you get twice as many when you're eating dairy products and meat that comes off of the feedlots. We're producing bad food in America. It's cheap, and that's what you get with cheap food. You get a lot of cheap, poor, bad food. Hang on, I'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of the alleged crime, and what should you say to the police or investigators, and what you ought not to say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself and your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion hearings, trial and appeal, and you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits, and introduce evidence, conduct discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. Now, there are just 28 things that you need to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure, not 280 or 2,000, just 28 elements or 28 things that you need to know. Rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. If you could keep your mouth shut, if you could stop saying things and shut up, you know, you'd have about 90% of the case won. And after rule one's out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email, send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, let's take a look at another problem here. Let's just mention the problems of bacterial contamination, such as salmonella, E. coli, and staphylococcal infections that can be traced to milk. Now, back in the old days, tuberculosis was a major problem, and some folks want to go back to those times by insisting on raw milk on the basis that it's natural. This is insanity. And a study from UCLA showed that over a third of all cases of salmonella infection in California from 1980 to 1983 were traced to raw milk. Now, that'll be a way to revive good old brucellosis again, and I would fear leukemia, too. More about that later. In England and Wales, where raw milk is still consumed, there have been outbreaks of milk-borne diseases. The Journal of the American Medical Association reported a multi-state series of infections caused by Yersinia enterocolitica in pasteurized whole milk. This is despite safety precautions. All right, now hang on here for a second. Notice that this man tells us that if you said you want to go back to raw milk because it's natural, he says this is insanity. And then he says, listen, did you know that one-third of the cases of salmonella reviewed or reported in California were traced to raw milk? Then the last sentence down here says the Journal of the American Medical Association, volume 251, page 483 in 1984, reported a multi-state series of infections caused by, and he lists them, pasteurized whole milk. Now, come on here, guys. It doesn't matter a rat's rectum whether this stuff is pasteurized or not. In fact, it's worse if it's pasteurized because you get degenerative disease like atherosclerosis. And then on top of that, you get infectious diseases out of this crap as well. E. coli comes out of raw hamburger. You shouldn't be getting E. coli out of your hamburger or out of your milk. And then I mentioned before, there may be some dirty raw milk out there. But I'll tell you, you'll be better off health-wise to have infectious disease than you will to have degenerative disease. You mean you want to trade pneumonia for AIDS? You want to trade, let's say, typhoid fever for Lou Gehrig's disease? You know, these degenerative diseases are fatal. You know, kind of like Jacobs Creutzfeldt disease and so on. That's what's coming out of mad cow disease. You get 100,000 cows a year, you're grinding them up and throwing them back into animal feed again? And you call that intelligent? No, this guy calls God insane. He says, this is insanity. Well, then God has to be insane. You know, my common sense tells me that if God, when he was designing cow's milk, sheep's milk, goat's milk, and then telling us 16 times that he's leading us into a land of milk and honey. And then gives us a couple of examples, you know, like here's Melchizedek, the guy that later became Jesus Christ of the New Testament, along with two angels, are having lunch with Abraham, and they're eating meat, eating butter, and drinking cow's milk. Come on, guys. God didn't know about pasteurization. Don't you think he would have said, now listen, be sure that you pasteurize your milk before you drink it? Oh, they didn't know about boiling milk. Well, listen, he gave us a statute that says you shall not see the kid in his mother's milk. That is, you shall not boil a kid in milk. You suppose maybe he was trying to tell you something about pasteurization? Did it ever occur to you that maybe boiled milk kills people? Yeah, it does. And out of the 2,700 articles that this doctor couldn't find anything therapeutic or good to say about milk, and vegetarians never do, and this guy's a vegetarian. You'll see that as we read a little bit further into his treatise here. Now, I'm not against vegetarians, and all you veggies out there that want to eat vegetables, that's great. You just go right ahead and do that. But did you know that vegetarianism is a doctrine of devils? The Apostle Paul, writing a letter to Timothy in chapter 4, this is 1 Timothy chapter 4, said, now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter days, latter times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. Here are some doctrines of devils. Speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron, forbidding to marry, and commanding to abstain from meats which God has created to be received. So forbidding to marry, all you Catholic priests out there, is a doctrine of devils, so says the Bible in 1 Timothy chapter 4. Don't get mad at me now. I'm a reporter. I'm an investigative reporter. Don't get mad at me because I'm reporting to you what the Bible says. It's been there all these years. I didn't tell you anything new. Forbidding to marry is a doctrine of devils, and forbidding or commanding to abstain from meats, vegetarianism, is a doctrine of devils. Now, if you want to practice witchcraft and the doctrine of devils, that's a choice you have to make, isn't it? And isn't it a choice that we're talking about here? I mean, after all, think about it in pragmatic terms. This raw milk has a special enzyme. Do you remember that? The question arises, should I drink milk? Should I drink raw milk? Is milk good or bad? Should I drink Coke? Should I drink pasteurized milk? Am I lactose intolerant? Would God drink milk? Did God drink milk? You know, and I answered those questions. God would drink milk. God did drink milk. He gave you milk to drink. He gave you meat to eat. He gave you women to marry. And told you to do it. And then, of course, we got a one-upsmanship God. We got to fix his mistakes. And so we got a priesthood that doesn't marry. We got vegetarians coming out of our earballs over here. And then we got people over here telling us not to drink milk. And then we got other people over here telling us you should drink milk, but boil it first. God told you not to eat a kid or see the kid in his mother's milk. Must be something wrong with that boiled milk. And he sure as hell didn't tell you to boil the milk before you drink it. If God told you to stand up, you'd sit down. If he told you to come here, you'd go there. That's just the way human beings are. And of course, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty, and that's all I'm reporting to you, is that there are choices to be made. I'm not here to convince you that you should drink milk or you shouldn't. Now, this guy's got an axe to grind. He says you shouldn't be drinking milk at all. And I'm going to concur with this doctor, because this doctor is giving you the straight skinny when he tells you don't drink this pasteurized, homogenized, commercial product called milk. I agree with him. And he's telling you some of the bad things that are in this milk. But he's not telling you the whole story. You see, the rest of the story is, as old Paul Harvey would say, is that God gave you milk because it's good for you. It's nature's perfect food. You can live without it. Most of the people in the world do live without milk, but it's not because they think that milk is bad for them. It's because, as I mentioned the other day, milk is at the top of the food chain along with honey. So when God gave us a land flowing with milk and honey, he put us, the covenant people, at the top of the food chain, and the rest of the people in the world just wish they could be here. That's why they're swimming across the Rio Grande River and coming across and risking their lives through the deserts of New Mexico and Arizona to get into the United States. They want to get here to the land of milk and honey. I don't blame him. I'd want to get to the land of milk and honey too. But those of us who are the heirs, according to the promise, living in the land of milk and honey, we boil our milk, we do the same thing with our honey, destroy the food value in it, and then drink it and get atherosclerosis, and then wonder why it is that we're dying at age 42 from heart attack. Let me tell you a little story here about goat milk. Down in Florida, I've got a student down there, and he's got a couple hundred goats. And the dairy inspector came by and threatened him with litigation, said, "We're going to prosecute you if you sell this goat milk." Well, the law in Florida prohibits selling raw bovine milk. It doesn't say anything about selling raw goat's milk. So my student, having been through law school, knew where the law was and knew what the law was and what it was. And so he told the dairy inspector to stick it where there's no daylight and get out of there while he could still walk. He did, but he went down the road to a neighbor lady and threatened her. She only had 27 goats. But he threatened her with litigation, and she couldn't stand the intimidation, so she closed down her little goat farm. And the dairy industry does that through the bureaucracy of the government. It's the government and the big business moguls who create this. I'm in favor of having little old ladies with 27 goats free to sell their goat's milk to fools like me that want to buy it. That's what liberty and freedom and choice is all about. What government and big dairy industries or the big multinational corporations want to do is to limit your freedom of choice. Just think about it. This lady and thousands of other ladies like her with a handful of goats producing 10 or 15 gallons of milk, you know, that's thousands of gallons of goat milk, and every gallon of goat milk is one less gallon of cow's milk that somebody is buying out of a grocery store. The grocery stores do not want little independent goat milk producers. The dairy industry doesn't want it. The bureaucracy doesn't want it. The state government doesn't want it. The legislature doesn't want it. Banks don't want it. And 99% of the American public doesn't want it because they don't drink goat's milk anyway. So when you get down to it, everybody's opposed to the little free goat farm selling goat's milk to anybody that wants to buy it. They're opposed to it. And so they threaten and intimidate. That's a police state. And those are police state tactics. Now, fortunately, for those of us that know the law and how to use the law, we're not intimidated by it. Now, you still have to follow the law. Here in Missouri, for instance, I can sell you raw whole milk. I'm the producer, and I can sell it to you, the consumer. But the minute I sell it to you, you can't sell it to anybody else. In many states, you can't sell raw, whole cow's milk to anybody, period. Now, that's monopoly. That doesn't have anything to do with the health, safety, or welfare of the public. That has to do with monopoly and the fear and the scare tactics that they use, telling you that you're going to get diseased. I'm 65 years old. I've been drinking goat's milk, cow's milk. I haven't drank any sheep's milk yet, but I've been drinking raw milk now for 20 years, and I'm healthy. In fact, if you want to test me, you come here. I think I can work your ass right into the ground, and I'm an old man. You couch potatoes from Chicago that have been down here to school have never been able to keep up with me yet, and I don't think there's any of you out there that can. I worked for an old guy named Frank Rocha when I was a kid, 15 years old. He was 55, and at age 55, he could load more bales of hay on a wagon in less time than I could at 15. I wondered about that old man. He's a pretty healthy old guy. I got to the point by the time I was about 18 or 20, I could outwork old Frank. He was pushing 60 by then. I could outwork old Frank by the time I was 20. And there's some of you out there that might be able to outwork me, but not very many of you. And if you're from the city, you can probably forget it. And then I'm drinking raw milk. And then I advocate it. I'm a partisan. And so is God. And I think it's good for you. And this doctor over here isn't telling you the whole story. Now hang on, we'll take our last break and I'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on The Law Hour are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. And this school includes lessons ranging from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, write motions, briefs, affidavits, asseverations, and so on. And I don't just cover what goes on in the courtroom either. You'll learn preliminary procedures, arraignments, bail setting, what papers to file, how to put exculpatory evidence in the record, how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there's 28 things, 28 elements that you have to master in courtroom strategy and procedure. And you'll learn all of them here at the law school in this class. Now, for more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just go to my webpage, georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's the place to start. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto that email. Send me an email request, and I'll be happy to send that to you. It's free of charge. Or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. That's the way I do business. I just pick up the telephone and call them on the phone. Here's what I want. You can do that here. Just pick up the telephone and call us, 417-273-4967, and just say, hey, listen, I'd like to have a copy of that free CD set. And I'll just say, well, give me a name and address, and we'll whip it right on you. All right, we're talking about the science of milk. And we got a good article here. I had a student, remember, he called me and he said, can you refute some of these arguments? And that's exactly what I'm doing. But the arguments that this guy is making against milk isn't against milk per se. It's against pasteurized, homogenized, dirty milk. Listen to this. The problem with milk is that the milk is dirty to start with. It's not dirty because there's cow poops in the milk. It's dirty because the dairy farmer is shooting penicillin up into the cow. It's dirty because the dairy farmer is spreading pesticides and chemical fungicides and fertilizers on the land. And when the grass grows up, the cow eats these pesticides and fertilizers and et cetera, and it comes out in the milk. He gives them GMO milk. He produces GMO milk, genetically modified organism milk. And he produces BST milk and BGH milk. The dairy farmer is doing this. Comes right out of the cow's tits. Goes right into that glistening stainless steel, perfectly sterile pipe and goes down into that stainless steel bulk tank. He feeds the cows bypass protein, which comes out in the milk. He gives those cows antibiotics that comes out in the milk. Then we take it in and nuke it. We irradiate the milk. This milk is adulterated. That's what's dirty. This milk that comes out of the cow is filled with pus. P-U-S. Pus. I mean, this crap ain't fit for a dog. I mean, honest to God, I wouldn't feed it to my dog. I'd be afraid to pour it on the ground for fear that it would sterilize it like salt. And, of course, this doctor is telling us the truth about how dirty this milk is. Kind of like old Oprah Winfrey, remember? She said, well, let me tell you the truth. Let me tell you what's going on in your hamburger over here. And remember, she got sued for it. And I haven't been sued yet, but one of these days somebody will jump on me and they'll want to sue me. I always like to get sued that way, and I'll tell you why. I had a guy sue me one time. His name was Tim. I won't give his last name. He might sue me again if I told you his name. Tim the lawyer. And he was representing it was Webster County. I sued Webster County and a couple other public officials over there. And old Tim and I went at it, and we were in trial. I don't know, we were in this case about, probably 18 months, something like that, 2 years maybe. And we argued this case, and it was a jury trial. He demanded a jury trial. He'd offered to settle with me out of court, and I said, no, I ain't settling. Let's take it forward, and we did. And he won the jury trial. The jury came back and found all the defendants not guilty. God, was he cocky. He went out in the hall, and he was practically laughing up his armpit. Old Tim was. And he said, well, I guess I whipped your butt. And I said, you're right, Tim. God, I got to give you credit for that. You did a hell of a good job. You did a wonderful presentation. Closing argument was dramatic. And I said, now your clients, the insurance company, paid you $32,000. That's what he wanted in cost, $32,000. He said, the insurance company now paid you $32,000. I'm judgment-proof. You ain't getting nothing out of me. So they're going to eat the $32,000. I spent about $2,000 on this case. And I contend that I've got more $2,000 bills than the insurance company has $32,000 bills. And I said, to demonstrate that, I'm going to give you another shot at me just as soon as you're ready. I have never seen Tim Gammon or the insurance company in court from that day to this, and that's been 10 or 15 years. Don't ever let anybody tell you you can't beat City Hall. If I had to go hire an attorney and pay him $15,000 or $30,000 or $40,000, I couldn't stay in the game. But hey, listen, the insurance company can't stay in the game with me either. And that's because insurance companies are in the business of making profit. They're not interested in civil rights issues. They're not interested in suing me. Now, maybe the American Dairy Association will want to take me on this series of articles, and I'll just come over here to notmilk.com and pull out all these scientific articles and eat their lunch. You know, it's not libel and it's not slander if you're telling the truth. If there's any statement that you've heard on this program that isn't true, accurate, or correct, why don't you correct me? Send me a letter. Hell, I'll put it on the air. That's what I'm doing with this guy here. I'm putting this on the air. Some of what this guy said is just total BS. You know, his statement up here that God is insane. I don't think so. When he says to me, this is insanity, well, what he's doing is indicting God for being insane because he didn't instruct us in pasteurizing milk. Milk should not be pasteurized. I've already told you. It's got that special enzyme in there, and you got to have that enzyme. Let me tell you a little story about the enzyme in the milk. Comes from Dr. Lester, personal experience. My doctor, his name is Melvin Lester, probably dead by now, lived in Ontario, Oregon. I'm over there at the doc's office one day. And he was a pretty good, you know, he was a pretty good doctor. Pretty knowledgeable guy. He was a medical doctor, chiropractor. What do you call these doctors, you know, that are physicians? Not medical doctors, but a naturopath. He was a naturopath. He'd gone to school after World War II. About 1953, he gave up the medical practice. He kept his license, so he was a licensed medical doctor, but he gave up the practice of medicine and went into chiropractic and naturopathy. And I asked him why, and he said, well, because he was killing too many people as a medical doctor. And he said, I thought I should be helping people rather than killing them. That was the first place I heard a medical doctor tell me that medical doctors are licensed to kill. So he gave it up. He thought that was bad. Well, anyway, he asked me if I had chest pain, and I told him I did. And he said, well, I see that in your ears. I get had lines in my ears indicated heavy doses of atherosclerosis. That's plaque in your arteries. That's where your veins are plugged up. You know, your arteries are plugged up, and you're about ready to have a heart attack. So he sent me over to a electrocardiogram doctor, you know, heart doctor. And the heart doctor put me on the table there, and he took this electrocardiogram. He says, oh, my God, I can't believe the results. Do it again. He did it twice. And he said, you know, you're going to have a heart attack, Gordon. You need to go in and have a quadruple bypass surgery. You're just all plugged up here. And so... Lester looked at it, and Lester said, well, yeah, you're plugged up pretty bad, that's what I thought, but you're not as critical as a lot of patients that I've had. So I'm not going to recommend that you have intravenous chelation. I'm going to recommend that we put you on oral chelation. And he sent me back here to the farm with my oral chelation, 90 days worth of oral chelation, and this instruction. He said, I want you to drink one cup of cow's cream every day. One cup of heavy table cream every day. So I'd sit down and eat my cereal. You know, I eat things like oatmeal and grits and things like that. And I'd put on my cup of cow's cream and take my chelation pills every day. And when we got through it, 90 days, went back out and took that EKG again, and it had... It had receded 30%. My veins had cleared out 30% in 90 days. And I asked Lester about that, and he said, well, sit down here, son, and I'll explain it to you. He was an old man by then. Hell, he was in his 70s. An old doctor. And he said, you see, when God designed cows, he put this special enzyme into the cow's milk. And what's happening, and what happened with you was, when you left the ranch, you were drinking raw cow's milk. That was great. That was wonderful food. But you moved to the city, and you started drinking pasteurized, homogenized milk. And it was that homogenized milk which breaks the fat particles down into molecular size, and it goes right through your stomach lining, goes right into your arteries, and it plugs them up. And he said, what we did was we put you on cow's cream that gave you the enzyme coupled with the chelation herbs, and it just reversed it out. It just melted it right out. Now, you just stay on that cow's cream for the rest of your life, and you'll probably live to be more than 70. Well, I'm 65. I'm the oldest Gordon in four generations. No Gordon has lived past age 61 since my great-great-granddaddy died in 1900 at age 42. Uncle Al died at 42. My uncle Al died at 46. Ed died at 42, the same age as his dad, 42. And my great-great-grandmother, died 2 years later. And she was 46. Now, I'm 65, and I'm in good health, have no symptoms. I mean, I have been sick in the past, boys and girls. I have had symptoms. I got over my symptoms when I quit eating fat, blood, pig, and homogenized and pasteurized milk. Now, this doctor here, Dr. Krajian, has a one-sided agenda. He's opposed to milk in general, and I'm opposed to dirty milk. I'm opposed to dirty milk, pasteurized milk, homogenized milk, GMO milk, BST milk, BHG milk, bypass protein milk, antibiotic milk, irradiated milk, and adulterated milk. That's what's bad with milk. But that wasn't caused by God, and it wasn't caused by the cow. It's caused by greedy human beings that are producing a product that's filthy, dirty, and it's being produced in ultra-sanitary conditions. You see, we take bypass protein, we take a dead cow, or we take a dead pig, grind it up, all of the pig offal, dry it, render it, cook it, and then put it in with the wheat, corn, beans, and feed it to the cow and turn the cow into a cannibal. And then this, of course, goes through the cow's system, comes out in your milk, and you're drinking it. And now we're wondering why we have Alzheimer's disease in the United States. And when we autopsy these Alzheimer's patients, when they died, they autopsy them, 13% of them have Jacobs Crutchfield. 13%. Yale study. I've reported that to you in the past. Well, we got one more lesson here to do in this series. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, and we'll do that story. One more here in the series here with Dr. Krajian. Well, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, for more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, just go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Okay, there's the signal. It says our time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.